false teachers and false teaching or false doctrine. Because when we begin to study the Bible, the Old Testament and the New Testament, we see that much time has been taken up by God in His book to warn us and to tell us about false teachers. And a lot of space is taken up in the New Testament to warn us about false teachers. You know, the Lord only has to say something one time, and that'd be enough. But I take it whenever the Lord tells us over and over and over about something, that something is going to be a problem, and that is something you and I had better take heed to. It's sort of like we've been studying on Wednesday night, Brother Don, about material things and our relationship to them and our giving. And as Don has pointed out, there's a lot of space taken up in the New Testament warning us about the misuse of material things. Now, why did the Lord do that? Well, He knew it would be one of our weaknesses. And the reason the Lord has spent so much time telling us about false teachers, He knew that this would be one of the great problems that we'd have to face, that we would be in a constant struggle with the devil through his ministers and through their false doctrines. And this is the way the devil tries to destroy us, through false teaching. And so in the church today, there is a great wave of indifference toward false doctrine and false teachers. And that's one of our great problems right now in the church. There are many preachers who do not seem to see or understand anything about false doctrine and false teachers. I had a fellow that told me the other day, said, we've got a good, sincere preacher. And I believe when he knows the truth, he'll stand up for it. But he just doesn't seem to have any conception of the problems that God's people face, and no real understanding of the kind of problems and the apostasy that is at work in the church. Well, I don't know how this could be, and men who are going to preach need to keep themselves informed. And if they'd read their New Testament, they would know that eternal vigilance is the only way to keep God's people sound. And so many brethren, though, are afraid to expose error, and they don't spend any time doing that. It doesn't make you popular. You don't hold a lot of meetings, and you get a lot of folks who shun you if you spend very much time trying to warn the people of God about the errors of the day. But that's not the way it was in New Testament times. Preachers in New Testament times were admonished to expose false teachers. The Apostle Paul, as he wrote to the young preacher Timothy, told him in the first letter and that he wrote him, 1 Timothy, the first chapter and the third verse, he said he left him at Ephesus. And one of his responsibilities was to expose false teachers and to charge them not to teach false doctrine. He says in verse 3, as I besought thee still to abide at Ephesus, when I went into Macedonia, that thou mightest charge some that they teach no other doctrine. Now, as you get into the letters, 1st and 2nd Timothy, you will see that Timothy had to deal with false teachers. False teaching was mentioned and dealt with, and some men are named, even in this first letter, who held false doctrine that had to be disfellowshipped. He tells him on down there in verse 18, This charge I commit unto thee, son Timothy, according to the prophecies which went before on thee, that by them mightest war, that thou by them mightest war a good warfare. So he points out that the preacher is involved in a warfare. Every Christian is involved in a warfare. But every preacher needs to understand that he's warring against the devil. The devil is real. You know, a lot of people in the church, I've been amazed at the foolish ideas people have about the devil in the Church of Christ. Well, let me tell you right now, the devil is a personality. He is real. He is at work. He is walking about as a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. That's what Peter tells us in 1 Peter, the 5th chapter, I believe in about verse 8. And many, many warnings about Satan and Satan's ministers. And so he indeed is at work, and we are in a war with him. We're in a battle. That's the only way we'll ever make it, is to recognize the battle, and we must join him in battle, and we can win over him only when we join him and expose him for what he is. You remember, Paul, as he wrote to the Ephesians, said in the sixth chapter of Ephesians is where I want to direct your attention. And down to about verse 12, he has first said in verse 11, and here he's talking to every Christian, he says, put on the whole armor of God. Now, what's he talking about? He's talking about battle armor. He's talking about a war. He's talking about a fight. Because we're in a war, we're in a fight. We're in a struggle. We're in a struggle with the devil and the agents and the forces of the devil. And so he says, put on the whole armor of God, that ye may be able to stand against the what? The wiles of the devil. Now the Bible tells us we're in a war. We're in a struggle. We are to arm ourselves to fight him, because he's out to get us. And that's what the Bible points out. We can win when we stand and do battle against him. But he says, we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but what are we wrestling against? Principalities. Against powers, against the rulers of darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. Now, what is he talking about? He is talking about error. He's talking about the spiritual wickedness that is found in Judaism, as we'd know it today, or in Catholicism, or in denominationalism, or in heathen religions. All of these are fighting against the people of God, against the truth of God. And we need to understand that. And the devil is using these wiles, he's using these devices to destroy the people of God. And their only defense is to be wise who he is, and stand up against him in battle. And so, the church has been lost, what we need to recognize, in some places, because the membership did not have courage enough to stand against false doctrine. Many congregations have been lost. Congregations are being lost today. You know, here we are, we're 40 years this side of the split over institutionalism. And so churches who stood 40 years ago against institutionalism were known as conservative churches. And many churches seem to have just drifted through the years that we're conservative. And therefore, we're bound to be right. And nothing really can be wrong with us. And everybody is right if he's a conservative. Well, that's some kind of party spirit. That's a misconception of what it all is. Many churches that call themselves conservative are as liberal as many institutional churches. The only thing is they just don't support institutions. That's about the only difference. In fact, many institutional churches would be sounder on many doctrinal matters and would stand with more conviction. I am persuaded by reading what I would call conservative institutional men than many in our own ranks. Now that sounds like blasphemy to some people, but this is the truth. These are truths you and I must face and recognize. And whenever we just have this attitude, you know, we're right because we're conservative, that is a denominational attitude. You and I are only right when we follow the pattern. We're only right when we stand up for what is right and when we stand against false doctrine. And we have these admonitions to stand against false doctrine. You remember that Jude said he was going to write concerning the common salvation, but he said in verse 3, "Behold, when I give all diligence to write unto you of the common salvation," that's what he intended to write on, but he saw a great need, and this is what it was. "It was needful for me to write unto you and exhort you that ye should earnestly contend for the faith which was once delivered unto the saints." Now he said, this is what now is needful. Brethren need to understand what false teachers and false doctrines are. And he goes on and enumerates them and exposes them in this one chapter. We need to earnestly contend for the faith. And Paul said in Philippians 1 and verse 17 that he was set for the defense of the gospel. Now this indifference toward error results from a lack of love for the truth. That's the underlying thing. Whenever you see a preacher or a church that does not want to do battle against the devil, you mark it down. They don't love the truth. Because the Bible teaches if you and I love the truth, what are we going to do? We're going to do battle for the truth. And this is what Paul said as he wrote to the Thessalonians. He warned the Thessalonians there about apostasy that was already coming in the church of the Lord and would, of course, finally reach its full fruition. And he said, as he describes this apostasy, in verse 9, he says, "Even him whose coming is after the working of Satan." And there again, I pointed out, Satan is our enemy. He is at work. He has his teachers. "Whose coming is after the working of Satan with all power and signs and lying wonders, with all deceivableness of unrighteousness in them that perish, because they receive not the love of the truth that they might be saved." What will keep us in doing righteous? What will keep us doing right? The love of the truth. When you and I lose the love of the truth, then we'll stop doing battle for the truth. When we stop hating error, then we will not stand up for the truth. You remember that David said in the long ago, in Psalms 119 and verse 4, he says, through thy precepts I get understanding. Therefore I hate every false way. Now, God teaches us to hate some things. You know, God doesn't love everything. He's a loving God, but he hates iniquity. He hates error. He has always hated error. He has taught his people to hate error and to expose error. David said, I hate every false way. And you remember the Apostle Paul said, as he wrote to the Romans, in the 12th chapter of the book of Romans and in verse 9, he says, let love be without dissimulation or without hypocrisy. And then the last phrase, abhor. This word abhor is a very, very strong word. It's not just I dislike it. But when you abhor something, you can't stand it. And that's what he's saying here. Abhor that which is evil, cleave to that which is good. So you and I, as children of God, we are to hate every false way. We are to abhor error. And we are to love the truth. And so if a man believes the Bible, and if he loves the truth, how in the world can he be indifferent toward false doctrine and false teachers, knowing that error will destroy my own personal soul, and it will destroy the souls of other men? This is what Peter teaches. As he would write in 2 Peter, the 3rd chapter, and looking down to about the 17th verse, he says, ye therefore, beloved, seeing ye know these things before, notice now what he says, beware lest you also, being led away with the error of the wicked, fall from your own steadfastness. Now, what did he warn us about? He warned us about being led away with the error of the wicked. Is that something just happened in the first century? No. Constantly, the wicked and the false teachers are doing everything in their power to lead us away from the truth. It's a constant battle. And we need to understand that. We need to understand that we will be lost if we espouse error. Jesus warned about the false teacher. Let's go back to the Sermon on the Mount. In the 7th chapter of the book of Matthew, this is the Sermon on the Mount, and he said in verse 15, he says, beware of false prophets. Who said that? Jesus did. It would be just as powerful if Paul had said it, because Jesus would have said it through Paul. But Jesus personally said this, beware of false prophets which come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ravening wolves. So here is a warning. He warns us that false teachers exist, that we're going to have to contend with them, and they're not going to go away. There's never going to be a period of time. There's not never going to be a utopia in this dispensation of time. There's never going to be a utopia in the church when we don't have to battle against error. And that's a lesson we need to learn. You know, I can appreciate people to a degree being, having the attitude everything ought to just be fine and united and no problems and positive. And I can see young people being naive to a degree and thinking, well, you know, it's just fine. We don't have to worry about that. But they're wrong. That's the point about it. We are going to have to deal with false teachers and false teaching all the way along. Now, it's not a happy lot. I have found myself giving my life to battling digression. Battling digression. That's what I have done all the way through. I suppose about every preacher does this, that gives his life truly to preaching. But I have lived in a time, and all other preachers that have lived in the period of time I have lived in, have lived in a time of great false doctrine and falling away and apostasies on every hand. And Jesus has told us about it. They're going to exist, and they do not appear as false teachers. That's what Jesus says here. They come in sheep's clothing. They come in a very deceptive manner. That's what Jesus warns about. This is the reason we can be led away by them. But Jesus tells us that they produce fruit here in this chapter. And he tells us that the way we can tell a false teacher is by watching the fruit he bears. In verse 16, he says, "Ye shall know them by their fruits. Do men gather grapes of thorns or figs of thistles? Even so, every good tree bringeth forth good fruit, but every corrupt tree bringeth forth evil fruit." Verse 20. "Wherefore, by their fruits ye shall know them." Just watch men and watch the fruit they bear. And Jesus said, you'll be able to tell them by their fruit. Then going back to the statements that were read by Justin, Peter, as he warns, he tells us now in 2 Peter, the second chapter, "But there were false prophets also among the people." Now it goes back to the Old Testament. And he says, there were false prophets among the people of God. But notice, "Even as there shall be false teachers among you." When? Throughout the dispensation. In every age. There will be false teachers among you. And so we have to recognize that false teachers rise in our ranks, who privately shall bring in damnable heresies, even denying the Lord that bought them, and bring upon themselves swift destruction. But notice the sad part of this. Whenever false teachers arise, they don't just carry a few with them. And that's the reason they have to be dealt with quickly. The Lord didn't say, now, they're going to rise, but don't be worried about them. There are just a few people going to follow them, just a handful, two or three. No, no, no. That's not what he said. He says, and many, not a few, but many shall follow their pernicious ways. I believe the American Standard says their lascivious ways.
their worldly ways. Now, if you want to get people to follow you, teach a worldly doctrine. We'll talk more about that. This is what appeals to people. This is what appeals even to brethren, the carnal, the world. The world is, it's easier to follow the world. It's more appealing to the flesh than it is to the spirit. Things that appeal to the flesh, we get caught up in it. And so a false teacher comes along with a fleshly teaching, and he gets a following. I heard a fellow over the radio this morning, and somebody's probably going to have to take him on. He's from down in Mississippi. And he's really taking on a lot of these liberal preachers that are preaching the truth on marriage and divorce, it seems. He is in complete error. He's taking the position. He comes on about 7 o'clock, and I can't remember what the station is, but he's taking the position that Matthew 19 and 9 is under the law of Moses. And that's an old position. And that you can just accept people into fellowship. It doesn't matter what their marriage condition is. Now, I'm just using this as an illustration. That's one of the heresies. But that is a lascivious heresy. Why, it appeals to people. I imagine wherever he preaches, they probably have the building full. Those are the kind of heresies that are being preached among us. Because these fleshly heresies appeal to people, you see. And if you get down and preach what the Bible teaches, what Jesus taught, that there is one reason for divorce and remarriage, fornication, that's not very popular. And so this is what he is telling us. That these false teachers will come and many will follow their pernicious ways, by reason of whom the way of truth shall be evil spoken of. What? The way of truth will be evil spoken of. Who caused the truth to be evil spoken of? False teachers. False teachers where? In the church. Well, that's a constant battle. We here at River Bend have to fight for every inch that we gain. Because we have all kinds of false teachers working against us, telling all kinds of lies about the truth that we're preaching. It takes double effort to try to get the seed out and the truth out, to let people know, and people have to stop and discern because of the kind of tales that are told on a group like us. Well, that's a bunch of Annies. That's a bunch of folks that don't believe in anything. That's a bunch of folks that let little orphans starve to death. That's a bunch of folks that wouldn't help anybody do anything. That's a bunch of sticks in the mud. That's a bunch of people that don't have any concern for young people. That's a bunch of people who they just believe it is wrong to do anything. You think that's not told on us every day? The way of truth is evil spoken of. Who by? False teachers. And who do they carry with them? They carry with them the many. That's what he says. And through covetousness, shall they with vain words make merchandise of you, whose judgment now of a long time lingereth not, and their damnation slumbereth not. But he told us that there would be false teachers among us, just as there were false prophets in the Old Testament. Let's go back now and look at the false prophet in the Old Testament. As we go back now to look at the false prophets, they told the people what the people wanted to hear. Let's look at just a few verses. First, let's go back to Jeremiah. In the sixth chapter of the book of Jeremiah, and look down, if you will, to the 14th verse. He says, we'll begin with verse 13, for from the least of them unto the greatest of them, everyone is given to covetousness, from the prophet even unto the priest, everyone dealeth falsely. Now, he tells what they were interested in, covetousness. They were interested in material gain. They were hirelings. And they have healed also the hurt of the daughter of my people slightly. Notice that word, slightly. They hadn't been interested in the people. They hadn't dealt with the hurt and the sins and trying to correct the problems in Israel. They say, peace, peace, when there is no peace. That's what the false prophet does, the false teacher. He comes along and he says, oh, there's no false teaching among churches of Christ. We don't have anything to worry about. The church is not on the verge of going into digression. There is peace. 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 And anybody who would raise his voice to say there is not peace, to say there is error, or who would attempt to expose anybody among us, he's a bad boy. Have nothing to do with it. Cut him off. Boycott him. Peace, peace, when there is no peace. That's always been the sound, the way of the false teacher. Let's look on. Let's look on to Ezekiel. In Ezekiel, the 13th chapter, and looking down to about the 16th verse, he says, to wit, or the idea of wit is know in the King James Version, to know the prophets of Israel, which prophesy concerning Jerusalem, and which see visions of peace for her, and there is no peace, saith the Lord. What did they see? Peace. Oh, it's all wonderful. Oh, it's good. No bad, nothing bad. It's just wonderful. Come on here and be with us. It doesn't matter what you believe, what you practice, or how many wives you have, or anything of this nature. Anybody that's disturbed over this kind of thing, he's a nut. Let's have peace. Does that appeal to the many? It did in Israel. And if you have time, you need to study the Old Testament. You need to see. You need to see what happened. And these false prophets, how they carried the people deeper and deeper into apostasy. But what were these fellows really interested in? Well, they were interested in material gain and personal gain. Look to Micah, if you will, the third chapter, and down about the 11th verse. And here he says, the heads thereof judge for reward, and the priests thereof teach for hire, and the prophets thereof divine for money. Yet will they lean upon the Lord and say, is not the Lord among us? None evil can come upon us. What did they say? They said, there's not any evil. There is nothing wrong. Peace, peace. What were they interested in? Money. Money. Go back and look at the verse. The judges, what were they interested in? They should have been interested in righteousness in Israel. Oh, no. They were interested in reward and in bribes. The priest, what they were interested in is getting their paycheck, getting their tent, getting their hire. They weren't interested in the people. And the prophets, they divined for money, the whole crowd, materialistic. They had jobs. They didn't care about the people. And you know one of our great problems right now in the church is jobs. Preachers have jobs. And if you preach peace and you preach what the people want to hear, you can elevate yourself to the biggest churches where the biggest pay is. And it's pretty good in many churches of Christ today. We'll hold my job. I'll be here a while, and I'll stay here as long as I can and hold my job. That's not preaching. That's not what God intended his men to be, either in the Old Testament or in the New Testament. And when they become hired, they're no good to the kingdom. Anytime a preacher of the gospel looks upon the work of preaching like a lawyer or a doctor looks upon his work, he ought to get out of the pulpit, and brethren ought to put him out of the pulpit. Because he is going to advance himself for the high dollar. A doctor, what is he trying to do? Rise in his profession. I have no objection to a doctor doing that. If he's good and does his work well, I have no objection to a lawyer or any other professional man. But a preacher's not a professional man. He's a man of God. He's given his life to stand up and to proclaim and to teach the Word of God in spite of everything. And whenever men teach for hire, then you got sorry preachers. Sorry preachers. A hireling is not going to stand. He's not going to deal. And that's exactly what Peter is telling us. Look in this context. For covetousness, through covetousness, they are make merchandise of the people. Do you think that just happened in the first century? You think you and I are not plagued with that today? If you think we're not, open your eyes. Get your head out of the sand and see. And you take that many churches, they just are not going to have a man come and live among them who will cut it down the line and preach it like it is. And false teachers hunt the big churches where there is the big money. And when you watch digression, what churches as a whole generally always tear the digression and drift? It is where the money is. It is where the people are, and where they have drawn in the weakness. False teachers always have the weak and the worldling aligned with them. Always. Always. Spiritual people, with very few exceptions, ever align with these kind of teachers. But this is what Israel had to deal with. And these fellows were very dissolute. Our time's about gone. But they were very dissolute in their lives. When you go back to the book of Isaiah, and we'll just look in the 28th chapter and look down to about verse 7. And he says, "But they also have erred through wine and through strong drink are out of the way. The priest and the prophet have erred through strong drink. Hard to believe, isn't it? They turned to the bottle. You know, Brother Halbrook, when he was with us here, he may have said some of this publicly, I'm not sure, but he'd been out on the West Coast for about a month before he came here, best I remember. And he told me what he found out there. He found men who call themselves gospel preachers defending social drinking and drinking. He said many churches out there are already lost. Already lost. No way to ever turn them back through the worldliness and the ungodliness. And so he says the priest and the prophets have erred through strong drink. They are swallowed up of wine. They are out of the way through strong drink. They err in vision. They stumble in judgment. For all tables are full of vomit and filthiness, so that there is no place clean. Just a bunch of drunks. Where did this happen? In Israel. Who were these people? They're teachers. They're prophets. They're priests. There were false teachers, Peter said, among the people. False prophets among the people. Even as there would be false teachers among us. My time's gone. I'm going to quit. We'll pick up here Sunday. Next be the Lord's will next Sunday night. I want to talk about some of these things. The Bible spends a lot of time on these things. And whenever a people don't hear this, and we hear all of the sweetness sometimes, we fail to recognize what a battle that we are in. And we fail to recognize the great deception that the devil brings among us through false teaching. There are many men today who are of great influence, who are teaching some very pernicious doctrines. Some of them are going to come to Florence and preach. Won't be long. And what I know has been taught by one I know, it's a very pernicious doctrine. Brethren, we're going to have to, and we are, but we're just going to have to stand, and we're going to have to see. These things will sweep the church completely off of a continent. We almost saw ourselves swept off with the institutional movement, but we're in a movement now that we must stop it. We must stand against it. We must inform, or the church of the Lord will not survive into the next century in this continent. I'm not saying it won't survive in the earth. But we face some terrible, terrible times in the future. And there are many able people, women and men, who understand what we face. I'm showing Brother Don this morning some material a woman had written, and she's teaching a ladies' class dealing with the digression that we're now in. Brother Irvin Lee's daughter, married to a preacher, lives over in Athens. Very fine things. It thrills my heart when I see both men and women who understand the days that we're in and what we now face. And none of us can stick our head down in the sand and say, well, you know, I wish it'd go away. I do too. I wish it would go away. It's not going to go away. The only way we're going to win is to meet the devil on his own ground and defeat him. But he, through his pernicious ways, is going to carry many with him. Are you here tonight and out of Jesus Christ? You need to be. You need to come, if you are, rather, if you're out of Christ. You need to come and be in Christ. You need to come and obeying the gospel. You need to come believing with all of your heart that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God. You need to repent of your sins. Confess your Lord before this good audience, and we'll assist you in baptism for the remission of sins. If you're here and an erring child, won't you come as we stand and as we sing?
I am in love.
Several weeks ago, I dealt with several lessons that had to do with the helping of our young people. We talked about choosing a companion and some things of this nature and dealing with teenage problems. And one of the problems I did not deal with at the time was dancing. I thought I would wait a little later on till we sort of got into prom time, and this is time when schools are having their proms, and sometimes this helps young people and strengthens them, because there's a great temptation to attend the prom, and we need to understand what is wrong with dancing. And so my question